Now, Boris Yeltsin has called for resistance. He's calling for a general strike. What are other politicians there saying?
Well, Edward Shevardnadze, the former foreign minister, is having a press conference starting, I believe, in just a few minutes. I believe the mayor of Moscow, I don't know precisely what he said, but he also apparently spoke this morning supporting Yeltsin's statement. You know, obviously there are people who are not going to just lie down and let this happen. But, you know, beyond Yeltsin's call for a general strike at this moment, I think that's the most important opposition voice at this point, and we'll have to see what happens as a result of that.
And yet the committee running the country now includes the KGB and the military. Is resistance a plausible idea here?
Well, armed resistance is not, obviously. If in fact the military, if the army, the rank and file soldiers go along with and obey the orders of this committee. But, you know, let me remind you of what happened in Lithuania in January when there was a terrible show of force by the military, and the Lithuanian people with civil disobedience essentially, you know, forced the military to back down. There was bloodshed. 15 people died in Lithuania in January. And, of course, we don't know exactly, you know, what happened, who gave what order. But at some point after that bloodshed and the worldwide reaction condemning that, you know, eventually the military backed down. Now, you know, as I say, there's in Moscow, people seem stunned more than anything at this point. There were some demonstrators down by the Kremlin. It's hard to say what will happen. Will more people go down there? Will they try to arrange some kind of vigil to try to stand up to this military force? It's not clear. Boris Yeltsin, of course, has no army of his own. The other Soviet republics do not have their own armies. They cannot put up any kind of military fight. If there's to be resistance, you know, there could, of course, be armed resistance in some places, perhaps in Armenia, perhaps in Georgia, southern republics of the Soviet Union. But on a wide scale, I think the only, you know, the only really feasible means of resistance is passive civil disobedience, as Yeltsin was calling for today.
NPR's Ann Cooper in Moscow. Joining us now is NPR's Ted Clark. Ted, President Bush met with reporters at his vacation home in Kennebunkport, Maine, and called today's developments extra-constitutional.
That's right. The president does not think this was a constitutional transfer of power that just took place in Moscow. He called it a coup by the KGB and the military, and he said it's a very hardline group that seems to be calling the shots there. He said it could have serious consequences for the Soviet people and for the Soviet Union's relations with other countries, including the United States. He reminded people of the changes that President Gorbachev has already put in place, reminding us that this era of cooperation should continue, that Gorbachev was so pivotal in creating, and he said we do not want to see that era of cooperation change, obviously. He's been in touch with allied leaders already around the world. He's been in touch with Secretary of State James Baker and with the ranking American diplomat in our embassy in Moscow, and the president said all our people, I assume he means embassy staff people, are safe. And he said we'll follow events very carefully to determine what the United States' response should be.
Does he think the coup is reversible?
Well, he thinks it might be. He said, remember, coups can fail when they run up against the will of the people. And he said he's convinced that the Soviet people want reform. And he said that with a coup like this, you never know what's going to happen. It's awfully early to say that the reforms that Mr. Gorbachev put in place are reversible.
Does the president know who's in charge?
Well, not really. Obviously, it's a hardline group, the president said, but as for who is actually the leader in the Soviet Union, the president said he didn't know. He said that American officials may contact the new leaders in the Soviet Union, but he doesn't want to do anything to confer legitimacy on these new leaders, whom he called extra-constitutional.
The United States and the Soviet Union have been involved in a lot of cooperative efforts here. What happens to those?
Well, the economic cooperation gets put on hold, the president said. Any talk of giving the Soviet Union economic aid or better trade benefits will be put on hold. But the president stressed that he wants the START treaty, the Strategic Arms Treaty, to go forward and be ratified by the Senate.
What about efforts toward a Middle East peace conference? Both were involved in that.
Well, it's very early to say what will happen with that. The president, I didn't hear the president comment on that directly today, but as you know, the peace conference is to be jointly sponsored by the United States and the Soviet Union. I don't know now whether that conference can go ahead as planned. Of course, there were lots of other uncertainties about that conference, and it was not at all certain that it was going to go ahead in October as hoped.
It's got to be a shocking thing for President Bush. He just had a summit with this man.
Oh, I think it was a shocking thing. He said he had no indication that this was coming. U.S. intelligence, of course, has been warning that such a thing was possible for some time, but he did not know it was going to happen. He was awakened last night, U.S. time, by his national security advisor, Brent Scowcroft, and given the news, everybody in the U.S. government, I think, has been caught by surprise.
Thank you very much. NPR's Ted Clark.
Good morning. Russian Federation President Boris Yeltsin has denounced today's ouster of Soviet President Gorbachev, calling it a right-wing reactionary coup. Yeltsin says he is ordering the Russian Federation's government and people not to obey the new leadership. World leaders expressed shock at the Soviet developments. The change of leadership caught the White House by surprise. Hurricane Bob is moving up the Atlantic coast after pounding the Outer Banks of North Carolina. It is now aiming its 115-mile-an-hour winds at New England. And those are some of the top stories in the news.
Hundreds of military vehicles rolled through Moscow streets today after a committee of military and communist hardliners seized control of the government. The Soviet military confronted demonstrators at two locations in central Moscow, but no injuries were reported. Armored vehicles surrounded the Russian Parliament building, where Russian Federation President Boris Yeltsin was among the demonstrators. The BBC's Tim Huell reports.
All around the Parliament building, people are beginning to build barricades. They've torn down wooden fences, broken branches off trees, and now they're bringing bricks from a nearby repair workshop, although it's not clear whether the bricks are for building up the defences or for throwing, if necessary, at approaching troops. The building of the barricades appears to be a spontaneous action. Parliamentary leaders say they've not ordered it. And officially, the building is only guarded by a few armed policemen who appear loyal to Mr. Yeltsin's government, and by several vanloads of Russian Interior Ministry forces who've taken up position in the inner courtyard. Armored cars are still standing along the bridge opposite the parliament, but they've not tried to approach the building since this morning, when Mr. Yeltsin climbed up on a military vehicle and read out his decree to the Russian people. It says the emergency committee is illegal, and Russian citizens can be punished for obeying it. But with the Russian Federation's TV channel now off the air, and Russian Federation newspapers unlikely to be published tomorrow, it's not clear how Mr. Yeltsin can get his message to the public. This morning, the Russian leader failed to make contact with Mr. Gorbachev and told journalists afterwards he believed all channels of communication were now in the hands of the leaders of the coup. Mr. Yeltsin said Muscovites should gather outside their parliament, but if anything, the crowd has thinned out since this morning. Tim Huell, BBC, at the Russian parliament.
Melar Sturua, a senior correspondent for the Soviet newspaper Izvestia, currently is a visiting professor at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. Sturua notes that this is not the first time a reform-minded Soviet leader has been ousted by hardliners. Nikita Khrushchev, who denounced the excesses of the Stalin years, was overthrown in a coup 27 years ago. He says the men who have ousted Gorbachev are not totally opposed to his economic and political reforms, but they believed that Gorbachev was going too far and that the hardliners saw their time was running out.
There are people who would like to defend socialism and socialist structure inside the Soviet Union, who prefer old economic system, and they want just to restructure socialism, to make socialism Leninist mean without abandoning it.
Gennady Yanayev has declared himself president, but is he really in charge or is he a figurehead?
Well, I don't think that Mr. Yanayev is in charge because he didn't have his own power base before. He was handpicked by President Gorbachev when Gorbachev was elected by the Supreme Soviet president, and he picked him up as his vice president. So it seems to me that he, in a way, legitimizes this change because he was a vice president.
Did Gorbachev have no chance to fight back? Were there no supporters of his in Moscow that could have resisted this?
Well, I think that events are just unfolding. We don't know now how events will go farther. It's just the very beginning, and everybody was surprised and taken by surprise. It seems to me that nowadays the forces of democracy are much stronger than during Khrushchev's times. At that time, of course, Khrushchev was hopeless when he was overthrown. Nowadays, because of perestroika, because of these 6 years of freedom, it seems to me it would be much more difficult to restore old-fashioned socialist regime. More than that, because the republics have now independence or are now very much involved in the fight for their own independence, it would be much more difficult to police the whole Soviet Union as before.
But the committee issued a statement this morning taking a very hard line toward the republics.
That's quite understandable because they want to reverse the situation, and it wasn't coincidental that this coup appeared just on the eve of signing of new Union Treaty. Despite the fact that this treaty wasn't satisfactory enough, it was still a real danger for all centralized structures because this treaty gave many freedoms and many advantages to the republics.
From the statements Boris Yeltsin is making today, one would suspect they might want to arrest him too. He's calling for a strike. He's calling for resistance to
yes.
What's going on.
Yes. The point is now there is a war of law, so to speak, because the new president now tries to implement the Soviet law throughout the Soviet Union, but the Russian parliament voted a new law which is above the Soviet law, which has priorities. And now, of course, in this situation, tanks are much more vocal than law and the justice. But at the same time, as I told you before, because of the 6 years of experience of relative freedom, it would be much more difficult to reverse this development. And there is another point. You can engineer a coup, but how can you solve all these almost insurmountable economic problems, nationalities problems, and other problems which are beyond the military solution?
Are you saying perestroika isn't necessarily dead?
No, it isn't dead, but there is a very serious setback, and it can be even bloody setback. But perestroika as such was dead before Mr. Gorbachev was overthrown. But the quest for democracy, the quest for freedom, is very much alive, and I'm very optimistic despite this very dangerous setback.
Melor Starua, a senior correspondent for the Soviet newspaper Izvestia, who currently is a visiting professor at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Jean Cochran. Soviet communist hardliners, backed by columns of tanks in the streets of Moscow, seized power today from President Mikhail Gorbachev. It happened while Gorbachev was on vacation in the Crimea. Reports say he has been detained there. Taking his place is his handpicked vice president, Gennady Yanayev. He now leads a state emergency committee that has imposed a 6-month state of emergency. The BBC's Tim Huell is in Moscow. He filed this report.
I can see armored personnel carriers
lined up in a column, preventing any traffic from moving. Pedestrians are crowding round the armoured cars, holding red, blue and white Russian banners, and it looks as though a demonstration is about to begin. Earlier, tanks drove right up to the Parliament building, and Mr. Yeltsin emerged to read out his new decree. It says the decisions of the emergency committee have no legal force on Russian territory, and all those who obey them can be punished under Russian law. Earlier, Mr. Yeltsin told a press conference in the debating chamber of the Parliament he feared his government no longer had any means of informing the people about his decisions. He said Russian Federation newspapers would probably not be published tomorrow, and he appealed in particular to foreign journalists to convey his position to the world and to the Soviet Union.
The BBC's Tim Huell reporting from Moscow. Military action is also reported in other Soviet republics. In the breakaway Baltics, Soviet warships reportedly have blocked the main harbor in Estonia, and troops have silenced Lithuanian television and radio. President Bush expressed concern over the ouster of Soviet President Gorbachev this morning as he spoke to reporters in Kennebunkport, Maine. Alan Dowd of Maine Public Radio reports.
The president said the situation within the Soviet Union is still murky, but he said Gorbachev's removal from power was done outside of the Soviet Union's constitution.
Clearly, it's a disturbing development. No question about that. And it could have serious consequences for the Soviet society and in Soviet relations with other countries, including the United States.
The president called Gorbachev an historic figure. He said the Soviet people supported Gorbachev's reforms. He said the coup was only in its first stage and could be reversed. He said it will not be business as usual between the Soviets and Western countries, but he said there was little the U.S. could do but stay calm and follow the situation closely. For National Public Radio, I'm Alan Dowd in Kennebunkport.
Wall Street is reacting strongly to Gorbachev's ouster, plunging more than 100 points in early trading. Economist Robert Stovall says it may go down a little more before turning around.
The most, I think, the Dow Jones will be off 120, 130 points at the worst, and it'll probably happen here before lunchtime in New York. I'd say on the whole day, we'd be down somewhere between 50 and 100 Dow points.
Economist Robert Stovall, this is NPR. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 101.30 points at 2866.72 in active trading of 55 million shares. Financial markets around the world are in turmoil in reaction to the news from the Soviet Union today. It has caused the dollar and oil prices to soar and share prices to plunge. The dollar gained sharply against the mark and around 1 yen in Tokyo. Oil prices increased more than a dollar to their highest level since the Gulf War. And in Tokyo, share prices lost more than 1,300 points on the day, about 6%. Hurricane Bob is bearing down on the eastern coast of the United States, and as it approaches, people are preparing for 115-mile-an-hour winds. Lorna Jordan reports.
Residents along the coast are pulling boats out of the water, boarding up windows, and gathering candles and batteries as they get ready for the landfall of Hurricane Bob. The storm is moving north-northeast at 30 miles an hour, and the National Weather Service says it will hit the Rhode Island coast about 2 o'clock this afternoon. People are being told the storm is very dangerous and are being asked to avoid travel unless absolutely necessary. Wind speeds are already picking up, and very high tides are anticipated with the storm. A tornado watch is also in effect for all of New England. For National Public Radio, this is Lorna Jordan in South Yarmouth, Massachusetts.
The White House has just announced that the crisis in the Soviet Union is prompting President Bush to return to Washington. Officials say the president will fly back shortly to meet with advisors on the Soviet crisis. He'll also swear in the new Soviet ambassador, Robert Strauss. And the president's expected to fly back to Kennebunkport tomorrow. Midterm federal elections were held in Mexico yesterday, and the polling drew numerous allegations of government fraud from the two main opposition parties. They say that hundreds of polling places never opened, ballots were not available at some places, and police intimidated voters at others. I'm Jean Cochran in Washington.
The crisis in the Soviet Union has prompted President Bush to interrupt his vacation in Maine. Today, the White House says the president will return here to Washington today for one day. News of the ouster of Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev was greeted with universal dismay by heads of government around the world, and there was a sense of nervousness as world financial markets opened this morning. From London, Michael Goldfarb reports.
The announcement of the coup against Mikhail Gorbachev took world leaders completely by surprise. President George Bush received the news around midnight at his holiday home in Kennebunkport, Maine. He spent much of the night consulting with National Security Advisor Brent Scowcroft and other top advisors. Bush spoke to the press early this morning and called attention to the illegality of the coup.
This move was extra-constitutional, outside of the constitutional provisions for governmental change. Clearly, it's a disturbing development, no question about that. And it could have serious consequences for the Soviet society and in Soviet relations with other countries, including the United States.
Bush's thoughts were echoed by British Prime Minister John Major, who added a personal tribute to the deposed Soviet leader.
I hope there is no doubt in anyone's mind about the immense contribution that he's made over recent years, both to the prospects for people within the Soviet Union and for the rapprochement that has taken place between East and West as a result of his efforts and those of Presidents Reagan, Bush, and others.
In Germany, Chancellor Helmut Kohl returned to Bonn from vacation in Austria to set up a crisis committee to deal with the situation. There are still 330,000 Soviet troops in Germany, and there was immediate concern that the new Soviet leadership might renege on agreements for withdrawal of the Red Army from the former East Germany. However, a spokesman for the Soviet Armed Forces said the withdrawal of troops would continue as scheduled. In Brussels, NATO Secretary General Manfred Werner issued a statement saying this morning's events gave reason for great concern and added the Allies were monitoring the situation closely. The Political Committee of NATO held an emergency meeting. Speaking from his holiday home in Portugal, United Nations Secretary General Javier Pérez de Cuellar said he was very surprised by the news and hoped the political change in the Soviet Union would not have negative repercussions on the world situation. Japanese Prime Minister Toshiki Kaifu called an emergency meeting of his cabinet to assess the situation. As events moved at rapid speed in the Soviet Union, leaders from the industrialized countries were conferring with one another by telephone. When the news broke, the trading day was well underway in Asia, and it hit the financial markets there hard. In Tokyo, shares on the Nikkei Stock Exchange lost nearly 6% of their value. The dollar rose sharply against all Asian currencies. The dollar is traditionally seen as a safe haven by currency traders in times of crisis. A Tokyo Central Bank official said the group of seven industrial nations were ready to take joint action to stabilize the currency markets. News of the Gorbachev ouster also hit hard in Israel. Officials called an emergency meeting to assess the coup's impact on Soviet Jewish emigration to Israel. Currently, 60,000 Jews have exit visas and are ready to leave. The Israelis were preparing contingency plans to get as many of those people out as soon as possible. Yuri Gordon, head of immigration for the Jewish Agency, a quasi-governmental agency responsible for bringing Jews to Israel, said, "This is apparently the end of the Gorbachev period. And if a civil war is expected, the Jewish people will want to leave in very large numbers." I'm Michael Goldfarb in London.
The question rises, who is this man who has pulled the rug right out from under Mikhail Gorbachev? CNN's Mark Leff has this profile.
The name Gennady Yanayev was not a familiar one inside or outside the Soviet Union until the day 8 months ago when Mikhail Gorbachev tapped him as his deputy and heir to the political system he reshaped.
Vice-presidentом товарища Янаева Геннадий Иванович.
At 54, Yanayev is half a dozen years younger than Gorbachev, but their political careers are remarkably similar. Yanayev was born in Gorky, east of Moscow, and like Gorbachev, is an ethnic Russian, as all Soviet leaders have been since Joseph Stalin. He trained as a historian and a lawyer, concentrating on international youth movements, worked in provincial politics, and at the national level with trade unions, international friendship societies, and the Communist Party Central Committee.
He never had really a power base. And he is the person virtually unknown almost to anybody in the Soviet Union.
His nomination came at a time of turmoil in Soviet politics. Foreign Minister Eduard Shevardnadze, who'd been expected to get the vice presidency, had just resigned, loudly, denouncing Gorbachev's efforts to give the presidency greater powers and warning that dictatorship was coming. If you make a dictatorship, said Shevardnadze, who can say who will become the dictator? Yanayev, whom many viewed as a conservative compromise candidate, told the party Congress he was a communist from the bottom of his heart. Liberals weren't happy about what was happening.
He's a typical apparatchik, you know. It's a member of nomenklatura, brought up by the system, and whatever he says today, I don't believe a word.
I would personally feel that there may be danger of excessive concentration of power in the hands of president if somebody else may come to power.
Although Yanayev was the only candidate for vice president, the party Congress rejected him the first time it voted. Yanayev missed a majority by 31 votes out of more than 2,000. Gorbachev said Yanayev was committed to his policy of restructuring Soviet society.
I want someone alongside me I can trust.
Gorbachev did end up with most of the new powers he wanted, and Yanayev did end up as vice president.
It's very dangerous because such man as Yanayev, I cannot imagine him as the leader of this country.
Gennady Yanayev, who calls himself a realistic radical, kept a relatively low profile after his election, not unlike vice presidents in many countries, though he has publicly worried about what will happen to people as the Soviet economy and the economies of its former communist neighbors in Eastern Europe move away from central planning and toward a free market system. Yanayev, who speaks English and German, represented the Soviet Union at the meeting last month that formally ended the Soviet-dominated Warsaw Pact military alliance, and said at the time he hoped the North Atlantic Treaty Organization wouldn't last much longer as what he called a Cold War organization. A few weeks later, his vice presidential duties as a ceremonial greeter had him meeting the President of the United States, who was in Moscow to sign an arms reduction treaty with Mikhail Gorbachev. Now, the word from Moscow is that Gennady Yanayev and George Bush are equals, with acting President Yanayev heading a new governing federal committee with powers far greater than Mikhail Gorbachev or George Bush have ever had. Mark Leff, CNN, reporting.
More reaction, of course, coming into the changes in the Soviet Union. Israeli officials reacted to the change with concern that the exodus of Jews from the Soviet Union would be halted. There was also doubt about the proposed October Mideast Peace Conference, jointly sponsored by the Soviets and the U.S. Iraq expressed pleasure at the demise of Mr. Gorbachev, saying the ouster would reestablish international balance. The president of the Soviet Republic of Azerbaijan, on an official visit to Iran, welcomed the change, saying it was the natural consequences of Gorbachev's policies.